Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 24th of November, recording at, looks like, 9:58 p.m. And that's British summertime, last broadcast during British summertime, as the clocks go back over the weekend. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook, so let's look first at the highlights. In here today. Stock markets have suffered again this week. There's been a fair amount of volatility, but the main trends have been down, and it's really only a minority of markets that have actually been able to maintain levels above their intraday lows that were established on the 10th of October. Now, that's, of course, when we had that coordinated rescue package in the interest rate cuts, first round of interest rate cuts. So overall, weak bias, including today with Asia, hit fairly hard. Among the biggest losers were Japan and Hong Kong, and I think a lot of that is due to the strength of the dollar and also the dramatic strength of the Japanese yen. And that is not going to help Japan's exports, and it really is an export economy, but it's not going to help their exports when we have the background of a global economic slowdown. Give you an idea, you know how strong the dollar has been, and it's up again today, and yet it's down 3 yen against the Japanese currency, currently at 94.30. Okay, what else has happened in here? So those trends, those currency trends, have continued this week with the yen outperforming the dollar against everything. Now, what we have also seen is quite a bit of weakness in precious metals, but they bounced in here today off those lows. Give you an idea, gold slipped down to a new reaction low, got down to 682.5, is currently at 734.75. So that's a turnaround of over $50. Now, what else? Crude oil is weak in here again today, despite the OPEC cutback. Crude has traded as low as 62.65 and is currently at 64.79. Most of the other metals have been down, and most of the other industrial commodities, I should say, have been down, and most of the foods have been lower in here as well. So what can we make of all this? Well, obviously, the global deleveraging has continued in here this week. And there's also a technical feature which is working against recoveries in markets right now, and that is the extreme volatility. Markets are so volatile that it is extremely difficult for the people who do a lot of trading, hedge funds, for instance, to perform in this market, so they start to do less. The markets are so volatile that they have alarmed investors who are content to sit back and watch with shock and awe. Therefore, the buyers are greatly reduced, and that global deleveraging that continues is often encountering a vacuum of demand. Now, what does that achieve? Well, it gets stock markets and commodity markets, any of these asset markets that are coming down, it gets them a whole lot lower or a whole lot closer to their eventual lows. In rapid fashion, and that's the situation we find ourselves in, where valuations are now really quite attractive for global stock markets. However, they are not near record attractive levels, and there's a valid discussion, debate going on as to whether or not stock markets, due to the severity of the economic problems that we now see, particularly in the West, a valid argument as to whether or not markets are likely to go to record oversold valuations. What would that mean? Well, it would certainly mean single figure PERs, but we've got a lot of those already. But the trouble is that the growth is coming down and the profits will be lower. So that maybe is a little less useful guide. But what I can tell you is that the S&P index had a very high yield of 6.21 in the second quarter of 1982. Now, I've mentioned that before. I've often mentioned that level in comment of the day. Now, currently the dividend yield is 3.46. So it's nowhere near a record level. Obviously, record levels are very seldom reached in terms of valuations, but a long-running theme in Fuller Money, really since the beginning of this decade, was whether or not we were in a long secular valuation contraction. Owen and I used to refer to it as a secular bear market in terms of valuations, which we then always qualified as meaning an erratic trend, fluctuating trend, I should say, of gradually rising yields and gradually lower P/E ratios. And I added the rider that the shape of that trend, that secular and bear trend in valuations, would depend on how much liquidity was being thrown at markets. In other words, if you had a lot of liquidity, as we saw earlier in the decade, then markets would clearly rise against that background. If money was being destroyed, as we have seen in over the last year or so, then that bias is going to be downwards. But the liquidity is coming in once again, as you now know. But that's only the beginning of a shift in monetary policy by many central banks. Now, I don't want to digress on this point too much, but we stopped talking about it in terms of a secular bear market in valuations, because that confused a lot of people, and they'd hear that term bear market. And I'm talking about back in 2003, 2004, 2005, when we were really very bullish. We were very bullish of equity markets, and they were all trending upwards in very orderly and consistent patterns, and that continued on into 2007. But come back to that point, that there is a real possibility that we are seeing this long-term secular valuation contraction, at least on Wall Street. Now, the last time that happened, was between the late 60s, sort of, oh, around 1967, give or take a year. I'm not exactly sure when that peak valuation level was was reached, and so you had this gradual valuation contraction right into the second quarter of 1982. So that's a long, very long, generational long process. But the stock market, and I think this is an important distinction, had actually seen its low in index terms during that period in late 1974. So the obvious point on that is that the stock market was underperforming from following the 75 bounce into 82. Because the animal spirits just weren't there. Investors were feeling more conservative following that very severe bear market. And therefore, The market was not appreciating in line with the earnings growth that was taking place. Now, there's a possibility that we may see that again this time, where you actually get index lows occurring either this year or at some point next year. And that's the bottom of the bear cycle. That's what I expect. But we still get Wall Street, for instance, underperforming during the economic recovery, just as the Dow had a glass ceiling at 1,025 way back in that period from the 60, sort of mid-60s right on through to 1982. So that's a possibility. But again, I wrote about this yesterday, and I also said that emerging markets tended to do better. And the hot emerging market at the time, back in the 70s and 1980s, was Japan. And it did spectacularly well, while Wall Street, as I say, had this glass ceiling at 1,025 on the Dow. Now, I would expect something similar, even if Wall Street gets that long valuation contraction, which I say is a distinct possibility. And my candidates for that superior performance by emerging markets would be China and Japan. Now, there's some dissenting voices in here. There always are. And that's because these markets have fallen a very long way. But all in all, we see attractive valuations, particularly in emerging markets. And that means that for some value players, this is a buyer's has become a buyer's market. But you going to buy aggressively? Well, no, because it's still catch a falling knife territory. In other words, these in markets remain volatile, and there's still a downward bias. So it's a difficult time. But what will happen? And an uncertain time. But that doesn't change the fact that we have considerably more attractive valuations down at these levels. Okay. So what's likely to take place? First, I think that governments are going to be quite alarmed by the additional downward pressure on their stock markets. They also see the additional downward pressure on commodity markets. Inflation is not a threat in this environment. So they're going to cut interest rates further, and they're going to go on pumping money into the system. And as I've mentioned before, that if you have a bearish environment, that doesn't lift markets immediately beyond maybe a day or two's relief rally. But then they go in and they cut rates again, and they pump in a little bit more liquidity. And that's what I expect for the rest of this year. I expect more rate cuts during the remainder of the year, and I expect those rate cuts to continue in 2009. And I think that in countries such as the UK, there's very considerable scope for downward moves in interest rates. And India, earlier in the month, cut its bank rate for the first time since 2004, I believe, when they started to. Actually, I think we had the last cut before they started to go up. So we're getting a. We're now seeing a shift in monetary policy, which is going from a headwind to a tailwind for equities. But that tailwind isn't strong enough yet to offset the deleveraging pressures, the insolvency fears, the credit fears that have been dominating sentiment in the market for so many months now. But that headwind will improve, and as interest rates come lower, and I've discussed this in terms of my own cash position, as those yields go down on the cash, and once stock markets begin to stabilize somewhat, as they will, then the yields in stock markets will really look quite compelling. Also, the yields in some of the long-dated government bonds will look quite compelling. So yes, this is still a bear market. It's a very tough one. We're very overextended in the that's for sure. We're very overextended in the short term on the downside. I do feel, as do a number of other people, that we have the scope for quite a good medium-term rally, but maybe that requires a few more rescues, a few more rate cuts. I don't know. But I do think that we will see a better stock market performance in November and December. And I think that that will carry on into the new year. Thereafter, it would not be surprising if we saw a long pullback and base extension phase because of the global economic slowdown, and I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. And I also think that people will rightly be fearful of the earnings downgrades for shares. But you weigh it all up, and I maintain that we're in the end game. Some people, of course, remain extremely bearish, but the biggest bears are seldom proved right in terms of their targets, just as the biggest bulls are seldom proved right in terms of their targets. How to actually play it? Well, first, you don't have to do anything. You can just watch and say, I'm going to let the dust settle. I'm going to wait until the technical evidence actually improves. What might that be? Well, you'd want to see base formations. If you feel that you don't want to be bottom picking in here and that you'd would not mind missing out on the initial rally off the lows, but would rather come in when an uptrend's established, then you wait until base formations have developed and possibly been completed, and stock market indices have moved back above their 200-day moving averages, and those same averages have turned upwards. Now, markets might be 20% or more off their lows at that stage. The other tactic, which we're now seeing from some of the value players, is to say that they don't know if the market's bottomed, and there's no confirmation, that's for sure. There's no confirmation that the stock market has bottomed. Not when you're getting and seeing a number of new lows in here today. So what they're doing is just nibbling, buying incrementally. And I think that's a very justifiable strategy. If somebody said, I'm going to put a small amount of money in every month from their cash position, I think that would be a totally justifiable strategy in this market. Now, if I'd had the wit and wisdom here to go fully liquid last year in terms of my long-term investment portfolio, that's what I'd be doing right now. But because I do have an investment portfolio, I also have a reasonable amount of cash that I do want to eventually put to work in the equity markets, but I'm not in any great hurry under the current circumstances. What I'm definitely not going to do is join the capitulation trade at this stage. Veteran subscribers, if you've heard me say this once, you've heard me say this 100 times, if you're going to panic, panic early. Well, to panic now would be panicking after we've seen all of these stock markets savaged, and that is not something that that I intend to do. I should have panicked early, but I didn't. I want to. My next important move, is to take advantage of some of these bargains, and increase my equity portfolio. But as I've said, I'm in no great hurry. Let's move on to the long-dated government bonds. And as long as these recession fears, let alone depression fears, are so are so strong, bond markets may well remain reasonably steady. I think there are some big risks in these long-dated government bonds because the yields are very unattractive. And everybody knows that an enormous amount of supply will be created in the United States. They will be issuing loads and loads of bonds to pay for these ongoing deficits. So the only way I think one wins in that environment is if the U.S. government decides to monetize their entire bond market. In other words, they just buy the stuff in themselves and retire it. I think there'd be an inflationary aspect to all of that because they'd be printing the money to do that. But that's not unheard of for governments to take that kind of action. But I think the much more interesting section of bond markets right now are the corporates, the better quality corporates. Those who like to live dangerously can look at the high yielders as well. Now, there's no need to rush into that area, but I think that those who are considering putting money into the market should, at this stage, be thinking about yield. They should be thinking about equity yield funds and also corporate bond funds. And we have a number of those candidates in the library, and if there are any that you want us to put in the library, we will happily, of course, do so, so that you can keep an eye on them. Now, what about gold and the other precious metals? Well, there's a back to the future element to all of this, not just for stock markets, as I've said before, but we're seeing all these precious metals come lower and the commodities, other commodities. My feeling is that gold will remain a relative performer versus the other commodities. So it's held up better than platinum and silver and palladium. It's held up better than the industrial metals, or at least most of them. It's held up better than crude oil as well. So it does have defensive categories, but gold has weakened overall in U.S. dollar terms. But my view on gold is that it's great portfolio insurance, and one can easily justify having a gold bullion position. I'm not trading it right now because this is not a good trading environment, my strategy, Fuller Money's strategy, has always been, you know, if you're interested in the precious metals, you buy them following setbacks. And if you're doing this on any kind of leverage basis, you want to be lightening positions after rallies. But whether you're buying bullion or buying futures, if you're buying, do so on weakness. That's been our strategy for years and years and years, and it's generally paid off handsomely. So what else to mention here? Agricultural commodities. Some of the agricultural shares have really been hammered down. When I see potash selling at well below 50% off its high, that starts to get interesting. It's still catch a falling knife territory because we are getting forced selling in that sector. But the difference is, of course, everybody's worried about a lengthy global recession. Now, what's a global recession? The IMF defines it as global growth of 3% or less. And I would be surprised if all of those emerging markets, particularly China and India, I would be surprised if they actually went into actual negative GDP growth themselves. But there's no doubt that this is a global economic slowdown, and that's what people are worrying about. But that has helped to, and some of them even worrying about a depression, But the big slowdown has brought back values in almost all of these all of these instruments. So that's why I keep describing it as back to the future. And for instance, shipping rates, Baltic shipping rates, they've come way, way down and back to their attractive levels, which existed prior to the big run on the upside in the 2007, 2008 period. Costs are going to be considerably lower. A recession means that demand will also be lower. But the point I'm making is that commodity producers, which faced such high costs in terms of energy, in terms of equipment, in terms of personnel, those costs have come way down. And they may well fall further and they may stay down for a while. So again, we look around the world. Commodity inflation, big problem in the first quarter of this year, late last year, in the first quarter of this year. That's over. The dollar fears in terms of upside move, beg your pardon, dollar fears in terms of a possible dollar collapse. Well, we're certainly not seeing that at the moment. And we have the opposite, actually. The dollar is so strong that this is going to cause problems for the US economy going forward. For that reason, I don't think that the dollar's move on the upside is sustainable, but it's still in form. And we can see that on the charts, and we'll also be able to see the eventual end of this run on the charts, but it's certainly not indicated at the moment. But this is a problem because the one sector of the US economy that had been keeping GDP in the States above the recession level was the export sector. And the export sector was benefiting from the stronger growth in Asia and other emerging market regions, plus the weak US dollar in which earnings were consolidated. So now the global economic slowdown means that export markets have shrunk and earnings are now being consolidated for by American companies in a much stronger currency. So that's a problem. And it means less tax revenue for the government as well. So I expect a long period of economic underperformance by the US economy. If it really is different this time, it's that the the US consumer is not going to come roaring back anytime soon. So there we pretty much have it. That leads me to think, what are my best candidates for eventual stock market recovery? Well, China and India would be very, very high on my list. Second tier moves would be some of the commodity producers, but we will have to see evidence that China's economy is strengthening once again. At the moment, it's still slowing down. Ditto India. And a lot of people questioned whether or not India would ever be able to afford its infrastructure development. Well, a recession doesn't help, but the big thing, the big factor that would have priced India out of the market in terms of its infrastructure development requirements, which are enormous, and would have also priced other countries out of their planned infrastructure development programs. The big impediment would have been those sky-high oil prices and sky-high metal prices. But that's all been blown out of the water. So as we go forward from here, the costs of developing that infrastructure will be way down on relative to what they were for a while in 2007. And that's good news for the economy going forward. So I think some of the growth engines, following this economic slowdown, which may well linger, probably will linger, certainly into 2009. But you know, you get into the second half of 2009, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these economies are showing definite signs of resumed growth. And therefore, I think they will lead on the upside, but let's wait and see. That's my theory, but I want to see the technical evidence on the charts. And once we see that, if, for instance, I'm right, and we see China and India showing some renewed strength, then I would expect to see those industrial commodity markets picking up, and then eventually the food commodity markets picking up once again. So that's the way I see it here right now. But again, I want everything confirmed on the charts. So Jeremy Grantham says he's taking a contrary view on China, and those who know him respect him. If I don't see the evidence on the charts that China is going to show relative strength, then I'll be more cautious. But what I am very confident of is that this bear market will end as others have ended, that we have seen the worst of it by far. And that's even allowing for an overshoot by both indexes and stock market indexes, and also in terms of valuation contraction. And I maintain that, you know, in 2 to 4 years' time, that stock markets ought to be significantly higher. And that's a wrap for another week, a challenging week. For sure. But thank you for your interest and for listening, and I hope you have a great weekend.